Earth and Sky.
I do think the public, in general, trusts scientists. So if we're careful in explaining things and do a good job of that, I think it will help in getting the actions that are needed.
You're listening to climate scientist James Hansen, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Hansen was selected as the Earth Sky Scientist Communicator of the Year by a panel of over 600 Earth Sky Global Science advisors. Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar spoke with Hansen at a recent scientific meeting where he warned of Earth's climate reaching a danger zone.
Back in the 1980s, I want to touch on this, you were the first scientist to testify before the U.S. Congress on the threat of climate change. What would you say has changed since then?
Well, I wasn't really the first scientist to testify on climate change. It had been discussed before. It was the first time that it got a lot of public attention. And that was partly due to the fact that the climate that summer was so extreme that people were willing to listen. But what has changed since then is that we have seen changes actually beginning to occur. Things like the ice in the Arctic, almost half of it melting in the last two summers. And mountain glaciers all around the planet are melting back at very rapid rates, such that they're all going to be gone within the next several decades if we continue to increase CO2. Glacier National Park will soon be glacierless national park. There won't be any ice left in it. And that is maybe an iconic example, but there are practical implications of that because hundreds of millions of people depend for fresh water upon rivers that originate in the mountains and are fed by melting ice during the summer and fall.
You've recently published research showing that CO2 levels in Earth's atmosphere now are in a danger zone, threatening conditions on which life on Earth has evolved and adapted. What's happening here?
Well, we didn't realize that we're already have increased CO2 into a dangerous zone. If we leave it at 385 parts per million, which it is today, or higher, then we're going to cause a number of problems, some of which are irreversible. We can already see that the ice sheets are beginning to disintegrate, but also we're putting pressure on species. A given temperature line is now moving toward the pole at a rate of about 60 kilometers per decade, and that forces species to try to move to stay within their climate zone. Well, as long as that movement, the total movement has not been too large, it's not a big problem. But if that rate continues to increase and continues for several decades, then we will push many species on the planet to extinction. And that obviously is a big problem, which requires significant changes in our energy use. We simply are not going to be able to burn all the fossil fuels.
May I go back to the urgency, I guess, but behind your message and the significance of using the term dangerous to describe the global warming situation today. Dangerous has a lot of implications. You know, dangerous to whom and so on. Tell me more about this choice.
Well, the word dangerous first came up in the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in 1992, when 170 nations agreed that we should avoid dangerous human-made interference with the climate system. The problem is urgent, because if we go even another 10 years building more and more coal-fired power plants, we will have the CO2 up to a level that there's no practical way to get it back down.
One of the questions that was brought up by somebody from the audience is are we all doomed? I guess this is the feeling that sometimes people may get, you know, when listening to news from scientists on this.
Well, we're doomed only if we stay on business as usual. And if we would get the message and get onto a new path, then we can solve the problem. And as I've said, it is a brighter future if we do that. But it does require that we realize we cannot burn all of the fossil fuels. And in particular, that means coal. Because oil, we've already used half of it, and we'll use most of the rest of it, because it'll take us that much time to figure out ways to power our vehicles. But coal is the primary source of atmospheric carbon dioxide, and it has much greater reservoirs, and it's very dirty stuff. It's got mercury in it, it's got heavy metals, and these things are polluting the world atmosphere and ocean. That's why you're told don't eat fish too much, because there's too much mercury in it. All of that mercury is coming from coal-fired power plants. So we've got to figure out other sources of energy. And that is possible. There's renewable energies, wind and the sun, and there's energy efficiency, which can reduce our energy requirements. And we also should look, I believe, at next-generation nuclear power. You know, people worry about the radioactivity that might be released from nuclear power, but in fact, more than 100 times more radioactive material has been released to the atmosphere in burning coal than from all the nuclear power plants in the history of nuclear power.
You've said that there is actually a bright side to the situation that we face, that there's still time for people to do something. What did you mean by that?
Oh, absolutely. The world beyond fossil fuels is going to be a much cleaner world. You know, there are several hundred thousand people per year who die of air pollution. Even in the United States, it's 30 to 40,000 people per year die of air pollution, and most of that comes from fossil fuels. So when we develop clean energy sources and we have vehicles that do not emit air pollution, it will be a better world. So, yeah, there's a bright side to cleaning up the atmosphere and climate.
You've been listening to James Hansen, director of the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York and the Earth Sky Scientist Communicator of the Year. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Joel Block, and you're listening to EarthSky's Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.